Thank you. I'm classified as an old student based on biological time and the fact that I've been practicing for almost 30 years. I think tonight I'm going to talk about dana, or generosity. It happens to be probably my most favorite subject for Dharma talk, because what I've learned about that has benefited my life probably more than any one single other thing. There is a little trap, as far as I'm concerned, in giving a Dharma talk on dana, and certainly this was true for me in my early years, that the person who's giving a dana talk is usually the beneficiary of the dana talk, and being somewhat skeptical and maybe paranoidal, that always used to cause a certain resistance. So when I give a talk on dana, what I do is accept the dana, because I don't want to foreclose the opportunity for you to experience and practice giving dana. But tonight, all the dana that I receive will go to Gil Fronsdal, who's my teacher. And actually tonight, so I get to practice dana as well, I personally, or my wife and I, will match the dana for the teacher up to a total of $250.
Don, I think you should tell people what dana is in translation.
Great. Dana roughly translates to generosity. And generosity is basically a spaciousness. It's a spirit of giving. That is most often expressed in terms of money, but that's not necessarily the most important way. People who donate their services to feeding the homeless and the thousand and one other good programs there are in the Bay Area and the million programs there are in the world, all of those are different forms of expressing the dana or the generosity of your heart. I think I'll start with a short reading from the Prophet by Cahil Gibran, who was born in Lebanon and I believe, but I'm not certain, was a Muslim. I treasure this book a great deal. Then said a rich man, "Speak to us of giving." And he answered, "You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things you keep and guard for fear you may need them tomorrow? And tomorrow, what shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog burying bones in the trackless sand as he follows the pilgrims to the holy city? There are those who give little of the much they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desire makes their gift unwholesome. And there are those who have little and give it all. These are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. And then there are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. They give as in yonder valley, the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. Through the hands of such as these, God speaks, and from behind their eyes, he smiles upon the earth. I was born in 1934 in the midst of the Great Depression, and I did not grow up learning about generosity or dana. Quite to the contrary, I learned about hanging on in anything I saw that wasn't nailed down, I took because I might need it in the future. So there may be some of you that just grew up either by the miracle of genes or by your upbringing where generosity is a very natural process to you. That was, as I say, not my experience. My first retreat, and I'm a strange bird in that I started doing retreats long before I ever even sat or knew anything about meditating. My first experience was simply signing up and going to a 10-day retreat. It was a trip. At the end of the retreat, there was a dana talk given because the teachers and the staff do not get paid. And so there was the traditional dana talk about asking people to be generous. And I immediately had my reaction about it. Great for them to talk about generosity. They're going to get the payoff. But I went into my, what for me was my typical mode. I said, well, we have two teachers who were here for 10 days, so that's 20 teacher days. And this goes way back. These are the actual numbers. I remember them. And I think teachers are worth $100 a day. They get the room and board. So that's $2,000. There are 40 people here. So my generosity is going to be $50. There wasn't any, that was just a calculation. And when I got home, my mind was running a tape that said, oh my God, Don, you are about as cheap as they come. I mean, there are people there who probably couldn't afford to give any dana. They're less well off than you are financially. And boy, it wouldn't have made any difference to you if you'd have given $100 instead of $50. So I beat myself up fairly thoroughly until I got to go to the next retreat. And then I did the exact same calculations, but instead of giving $50, I gave $200 or something. And when I got home, the mind did its trip of, God, you are such a sucker. You could have gotten away with just $50. And I want to say that I learned quickly from this process, but I spent 5 years struggling to figure out how to do dana until, fortunately, one day my mind sort of just imploded. And there was an impulse, and that's what I did. And that brings me to something that I think is very important in practice, particularly around the issue of dana or generosity. I like to pay attention to the generous impulses that arise in my mind. And if I'm looking at a newspaper or reading almost anything, there are always five things that, oh God, it would be great to support that. And I feel really good. And the hard-nosed reality is that I can't begin to afford to support every great program that's out there. So one of the things I also want to emphasize in giving a dana talk is that in a culture that's as complex as ours, where we have to deal with mortgages or rent and insurance and our retirement and health care and kids' orthodontia or whatever, that those wonderful, generous impulses also need to be tempered by discerning wisdom. Particularly, I found in spiritual communities, particularly in the Buddhist mode, there are a lot of people who have very big, generous impulses. And I have seen, because I also do some fundraising, and I also was a financial person, so I know the background of some of these people. I have seen people give far more than they could actually afford. So it's a fact of life that we need to enjoy, revel in, and express as much as we can that general impulse, but also to stay grounded. Now, generosity plays a very important role in Buddhist practice. It's been said, but I wasn't there for it, that the very first talk the Buddha gave to lay people was on generosity. That's how important he saw it in the practice. It's also true that generosity is generally regarded as the antidote to greed. And since we live in a greed culture, not that we're all swallowed up by it, but it certainly is pretty much in the air we breathe and the water we drink, generosity is a very powerful way to offset the forces of greed. I like to, in a sense, I grew up and my energy was like this of trying to grab everything and hang on to it. To the extent that every aspect of this practice is about letting go of our thoughts, letting go of our emotions, letting go of our opinions and beliefs, the natural expression of generosity is one of letting go, and whether it's letting go of money or whether it's letting go of our spare time and serving at a food bank or in a hospital or whatever, for some people here, a prison project where they go down and teach meditation at Soledad. So there are a variety of forms, but all of those are really forms of surrender, of giving up the me, my, mine, and opening to the entire community, to the entire world. The reason that I like to give Donna talks is because at this stage in my life, there isn't anything that makes me happier than giving. So to be invited to give a talk is just, you know, it's a great joy and a great privilege. I a year or two ago reconnected with a friend from high school who my parents used to tell me to stay away from because he was up to no good and never would amount to anything. At the time I met him, actually it must have been 3 or 4 years ago, it was back in Hartford, and he had played the dot-com boom to the hilt and was worth something close to $1 billion. And he was very grateful, and he could write out checks for $10 million to get things done. And it was one of the purest expressions of envy and jealousy that I've ever had. Not that I wanted the money for myself, although if I had it, some of it would stick here, I can assure you. But the ability to just be able to do that much was so awesome to me. And this guy, you know, he totally, and we spent 2 or 3 days and talked about the different ways we manifested. I mean, he was having the time of his life shoveling this money out. Unfortunately, the dot-com boom didn't last, and he's probably only worth $100 or $200 million today, but, you know, we all have to suffer a little. So it's that, for me, there is this tremendous joy in the opening of the heart space and in the letting go. That just means so much to me. As I said, it did not come naturally or easily to me. I wasn't born to it, and I did not learn it at home. And my experience, which I think is extreme, because I've never talked to any of the old students and have had anybody tell me that they spent 5 years struggling, experiencing pain and anguish as they tried to figure this thing out and come up with formulas. One of my engineer friends said a couple of years, but, you know, it's not necessarily an easy practice, depending on where you're coming from. And one of the things that I like to encourage people to do is to experiment. And there are several ways of experimenting. One is to give significantly more than you normally might think of doing and see what it feels like after. The other side of the coin is be really cheap. Don't give anything and see what it feels like. So you come to start to understanding internally what this means to you. Now, talking about Donna at this center is really an especially sacred experience, because to the best of my knowledge, this is the only meditation center in the United States that is run 100% on Donna, on generosity. Anybody can come in here for any event, Thursday night sitting, Monday night sitting, yoga class, book club, half day with Gil, full day with Gil, and you don't have to pay a dime. We are very fortunate that this is a community that's very committed, and so somehow there's always enough in the Donna baskets that we're able to carry on. And you can correct my number, Steve, if I'm wrong, but and when this building was bought about 2 years ago, there was a mortgage of there was $400,000, and that mortgage is now down to $150,000.
And
it was bought for $700,000. Yeah. $300,000 was donated towards the down purchase. There was a $400,000 mortgage. And all the rest has been donated, and it all comes, the daily stuff comes through the Donna boxes, and the money that's been used to pay off the mortgage comes from one letter a year and no personal asks. People just do what they want to do, what they're moved to do. This is, for me, absolutely priceless in this culture. I mean, where everything has a price tag. So I don't know, I just get high, you know, it's great. I think it brings something very rare to our community and to the quality of our individual lives when we're finally able to open to that kind of energy. And what that energy will be like for you, only you can know. And the only way I know to know about it is to do some experimenting. Just do a gift, see what happens. If afterwards you get home and you run the trip, oh my God, was I cheap? Well, it's okay. That's just the thought in the mind. That's no big deal. But play with it. Maybe suffer with it a little bit. First noble truth, there is suffering. If you're going to suffer with it, take a really good look at the suffering and see how you created that for yourself. But really open as fully as you can to what that experience is like. It can only be known really through practice. And there is no, God knows, I've tried the cookbook formulas. That has nothing whatsoever to do with that open-heartedness, that spirit of generosity. I think I would really like, I hope I've stirred some people up and would like to open to some questions or people sharing experiences. Anybody have anything they want to do? Because... No, okay. Yeah, great.
Donna's also thought of this whole practice, not even monetary, but giving is like, you know, you just don't feel good. And you see one of your friends and you give them a smile. I mean, it's as simple as that. Just getting out of yourself and doing something like that is an awful generosity. I mean, also if you're, people heard the expression curmudgeon, feel like a real curmudgeon one morning and decide to be nice to your spouse or nice to your coworkers, you may feel like a curmudgeon. That's an awful generosity. I know you're, if you really feel bad in a negative mood, I know your coworkers would definitely feel like it's an awful generosity that you're verbally abusive to them or something.
You're speaking next Thursday, Steve? And you're going to talk about opportunities for practice. So it's a good lead-in because the practice of generosity is just one of those things that you have dozens and dozens of opportunity every day, and it sometimes is as simple as saying hello and smiling to some total stranger on the street. Just opening and extending yourself outward. In the sense that this practice is, the use of language is difficult here, is about coming to see ultimately that there is no self, and this gets pretty advanced, and I personally have only had a number of momentary experiences of that. But what keeps us bound to the wheel, what keeps us from, the Buddha taught that, the Four Noble Truths, that basically the only thing he taught was the truth of suffering and the way out of suffering. And fundamentally that's about letting go. It's about opening and sharing and letting go instead of constantly building on this notion that I, Don, am important, that I've done this and I've done that and I am this and I am that, which keeps me in a limited space. It also gives me a boundary that I have to defend, and I'm cooked right straight out of the get-go. In a very real sense, as Steve suggested, there are lots and lots of ways to open to this and to experience it and to manifest it in not only here at IMC, but in the greater community. And I think that's for me, it's just a wonderful practice. There's something about walking down the street and seeing somebody who's a little morose looking or, you know, not very happy looking, and just looking them in the eye and say, hey, how are you? And boy, you get often, not every time, you just get a smile back and somebody's day is a little bit better. I mean, it's fantastic. Any other questions or... Sure.
My partner, I in my own personal way, sometimes not openly criticized him, but think that he's not generous with his money by giving to charities, any type of charities. But in essence, when his own demeanor at work and the people around him daily, he gives a lot, and it really does, and I appreciate that more and more the more I'm with him, and so I have to be careful, I think of the monetary aspect, and thinking, oh well, you can deduct this from your tax, and have to give more, and yet he does give a lot. I mean, he gives his own personal money to the people at work, for different types of functions and whatever. So he does give a lot, and so I think you have to remember that. And people, not just because they give money, or that it is true that they give a lot of themselves. And even in he's in grocery line, and everybody's waiting in line, they're all tense, and he tries to get some other checker and joking around with people. And so it's amazing the type of Donna that can
be. Yeah, it takes different forms for different people. And since I've done a lot of fundraising for different nonprofits, one of the things I've learned is that I cannot lay my expectations on somebody else. Even though I may know their financial circumstances, because that was what I did for 50 years in my career. I walk in, if I am doing an actual ask, I walk in totally unattached to whether they give or not. And I have to be really careful, because that little voice in the back of my head, I haven't made sainthood yet, just in case any of you had a doubt about it. There's still a little kind of judgment that pops up, but I just have to let that go. People are going to do what they're going to do. And my experience is that the best way to facilitate other people, to teach, to help, is by example. And they'll either follow or they won't follow. The last thing I would ever do is harangue anybody, particularly my partner, about, I think you ought to. But you can set an example, yourself, and maybe follow his example by when you're in the market. I like to make people laugh, so I act nuts on the telephone. I mean, it doesn't matter who I'm talking to. I start joking around. And, that's just a simple way for me to open up to them and experience people getting happy around me. Considering I was depressed for 25 years, that's a trip. I mean, that's really good stuff. Other questions, comments, observations? Things people want to argue about. Yeah.
We mentioned about the center. Not only is the center financially run by donations, but all of the operations are volunteer. Everything that makes the center run is done by volunteers. So from the gardening to the cleaning to the potlucks to the Dharma Friends events, there's plenty of opportunities, and I think there's a sign-up sheet for volunteers. And it's also a good way to get to know people that have their eyes closed.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, this place is incredible. Not $1 goes for a salary to anybody. Just people step forth, and Steve stepped forth, and he's been on the board for I don't know how many years, and treasurer, and I mean, I don't know how many volunteers we have, but it must be in the. Over 100? Yeah, I mean, just there are lots of things to be done. So The form that it takes is not really terribly important, but I think it was true for my own personal development that it was important for me to deal with this issue. And as a social scientist, from a sample of one, I formed the hypothesis, if it was true for me, it must be true for everybody else. Well, that's what Freud did. I really encourage you to experiment and play with and push your limits, pull away from your limits, whatever you need to do to try and open to the fantastic opportunity that's there in generosity. I think I'd like to do an experiment. So if you don't mind, and just be comfortable in whatever form you're in, I'll ask you to just shut your eyes if you're comfortable. And maybe experience one or two nice breaths in a very relaxed, pleasurable way. It is good to be alive and breathing. Now visualize that you're walking down the street and you have an apple in each hand. And you see a little street waif, pretty terrible, dirty, old clothes and skinny kid. And he comes up to you and says he's hungry and could he have one of the apples? What's your immediate emotional reaction to that? What's it feel like when he asks you for the apple? Then visualize what you do. What action do you take? And how do you feel about taking that action? Thank you. When you're ready, open your eyes and come back. And if anybody just wants to share anything that came up for them in that process, that would be great. I've done this once before, and I was told that apples were too easy. Particularly the women said they were so used to feeding people that it was just not a big deal at all. But I'm curious as to whether that evoked any kind of a feeling of joy or happiness, or whether you reacted with some fear and didn't give one of the apples away, or whether you gave both of the apples away.
Uh-huh. Like giving up money to somebody if you don't know what they're going to spend it on, that's a lot tougher.
Well, I picked the apple because my hope was that people would experience joy in the giving. And I was taking the easiest thing I could think of. I have some other ideas that I may pull sometime in the future, but my hope was simply that you would have a mini experience of the joy of giving. It's really a very special kind of experience. Anything else that anybody would like to share, comment on, argue with me with? Sure.
Did anybody else feel ashamed for having two apples and not being proactive enough to wait for the guy to come to you instead of going out and finding somebody? I felt ashamed at first.
That I don't know about in this room. But there is a interesting problem for a small subset of people who have money, that they feel unworthy of it, particularly if it's inherited money, and they tend to feel shame around it. So I think that's not a unique experience. But then it turned for you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, of course, being a good Buddhist, you know that everything changes. So, you know, you had that experience too. It's all temporary.
Well, I was trying to figure out if that was like the only food I had for a whole week, or, you know, and I was willing to give at least one apple. You know, I wanted to give both, and I thought, well, what if I hadn't eaten myself that day? Or that week, you know, and that's only two apples that I had. And, you know, then I was a little more hesitant to give both of them away, but, you know, I wanted to give both of them away.
So what that highlights to me, and it's, again, matches my own experience, that what tends to keep us from generosity is fear. It's the fear that we will not have enough. And I think I'll take this occasion to reread what I started with. Then said a rich man, "Speak to us of giving." And he answered, "You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. For what are your possessions but things you keep and guard for fear that you may need them tomorrow?" Not totally irrational, by the way, you know, we do have to take care of ourselves. "And tomorrow, what shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog burying bones in the trackless sand as he follows the pilgrims to the holy city? There are those who give little of the much which they have, and they give it for recognition, and with their hidden desire make their gifts unwholesome." In Buddhist thought, there are three kinds of giving. Which, see if I can remember them. The first one is niggardly giving. It's you give, but you sort of, you know, it's like you really don't want to let go. And then there's, I've forgotten what the middle is. What?
I know the last one is royal.
Yeah, the last one is kingly or queenly giving, where you just, you give the best of what you have. You don't go to the garage sale with all the junk you don't want, but you bring something that you care about and you give it away. So at any rate, the Buddha did not disparage this cheap aspect to giving. You have to start someplace, and if that's where you are, then that's where you are, and it's the opportunity to learn more about the process of being open and giving. "And there are those who have little and give it all. These are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty, which may not mean that they don't have the apple tomorrow, but their coffer is filled in a different kind of way. There are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. So when I suggest that you push your edges, that's maybe your baptism, and you may regret it. There are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, although they may experience it, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. They give as in yonder valley the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. Through the hands of such as these, God speaks, and from behind their eyes, he smiles upon the earth. So let's sit for about 1 minute. May all beings everywhere be happy. May all beings everywhere be well. May all beings everywhere live in peace.